This is Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. Man versus nature. It's a conflict as old as storytelling itself. And for one Grand Ledge man, it's a conflict he will never forget. Last September, Adrian Knops, an electrician and avid hunter, went on a bear hunting trip in southeastern Alaska with his friend, Alaska native Garrett Hagen. Only Adrian came back alive. And that was after he miraculously survived a week stranded in the wilderness with little to eat or drink, inadequate clothing, and no shelter. Adrian Knops was gracious enough to tell his story to Current State producer Joe Lindstroth. It begins on Sunday, September 15, 2013, when he and his friend Garrett set out to look for a bear. The two anchored Garrett's 50-foot boat in a harbor near the mouth of the Chickaman River, which winds into the Misty Fjords National Monument, a rugged, mountainous area known for its tremendous beauty. They moved into a 7-foot skiff and headed upriver for about 4 or 5 miles until they found their spot and went ashore. It was 60 degrees and sunny, a gorgeous day for a bear hunt in Alaska.
When we got back to about 100 yards from our boat, there's a bear in the water, and Garrett saw it first because he was taking the lead. And he was so excited, and I told him, I said, "Don't shoot it. That's a black bear." I said, you know, you want a grizzly. And he said, no. He said, "This is a unique bear that's only found here. It's a black grizzly." And this one was a black grizzly with a brown head.
A black grizzly with a brown head.
Yeah. He said that southeast Alaska on the mainland of Canada where we were is probably the only place you're going to find these bears. And he found one. And it stood about 9 foot tall, and it was standing on its back legs, and it was facing us, and we could see it very, very, very well.
And did the bear see you?
Not at first. You know, we came around kind of quiet in the trickling of the stream and all that, and he had a fish, and so he was busy. So after Garrett told me what it was, he took aim, and he fired, and he fired 3 times rather quickly. They're all perfect shots, and he got his bear. And it went under the water, and it came back up, and it was going to walk out of the water. You could just tell it was on its last wind. And I told him, I said, "Don't shoot that bear. Let him get out." And he was excited, and he shot it. And so it died right there in the water. And we were in water nearly up to our waist, and we skinned this bear out and gutted it out, cut it all up, quartered it. It took several hours to get this done in the water.
In the water.
Yeah.
Did you have waders on?
No. Blue jeans. Just blue jeans, not even long underwear. It was a beautiful, warm day. The water was very cold. But we did it. We got it all done. And we were very alert along a salmon stream cutting up a bear because there's more in the area. You saw another one upstream just a little bit jump in the woods. But anyway, we got it all done. And I had made him, since his little skiff was so small, I'd made him bring his – he had like an ocean kayak. I made him bring that in case we get anything. And he said, okay. So we packed all the meat in that, and we draped the skin, which was pretty much as long as the kayak was, it seemed, you know, on top, and tied it all up with a little rope I had. And we had like a tuna wrap, not tuna, but salmon wrap, smoked salmon wrap that we brought for lunch. We ate that. That was, other than breakfast, that was the last food that we were going to have, and that would have been early afternoon, probably, that happened.
On the Friday.
On Sunday. This is on a Sunday.
On a Sunday.
The 15th. So we got everything packed, and we got out to the river. Now, when we got to the river, the current wasn't particularly strong. It was a fairly fast current river, but when we came in. But when we are leaving, I don't know what was happening upstream, but the current was considerably faster. And it's a fairly wide river and very cold. You can see the glaciers on Google Earth up in the mountains that feed it. So we got down the river, and a couple of times a kayak actually tipped over. Everything was tied in because it was slightly overloaded. There was at least 300 pounds of meat in that kayak, plus the hide had to have been all of 150 pounds. So as we got down the river, and I saw how unstable everything was, and the boat was so low in the water, and we had the extra meat, and that we put some in the boat because the kayak wasn't doing well with the meat and the hide. I said, "Garrett, before we go out a half a mile out into this frigid saltwater harbor that if anything happened, there's no way we'd have enough time to swim back to shore," I said, "just drop me off on the bank. you know, it was a low tide situation. The bank was within half a mile or less of the boat. And I said, just drop me off. And it brought the boat up, you know, several inches or more. So everything was safer and better. And I said, just go throw your meat on board and come back get me.
At what time of day was that?
This was around 4 o'clock, I would guess, in the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. The tide was out. It was still going out. And you got to – I do everything by the tide up there because I didn't have a watch. And you have high tide, low tide twice a day. And that governed my life when I was up there. So he went out, but the tide was still going out a little bit. The day before, we had no problem going up to the boat to go back on. But – I saw him go all the way out there, and he became just a little speck next to the big boat. So I just was looking around at the mountains and the scenery and the beautiful day, and I could hear the drone of the outboard motor. And he got out there, and it was too far away to see if he got on the boat, but I knew he was right next to the boat. So I wasn't paying attention to what was going on out there. I couldn't have seen detail anyway unless I scoped it through the rifle. But and about a half hour later, he wasn't back. And that's when I did scope the boat out with the rifle and couldn't see him on it, couldn't see lights.
Could you see the skiff or the kayak?
Couldn't see the skiff, kayak, nothing. All I saw was a boat anchor, the big boat anchor. And it's like, this isn't right. After half an hour, I just knew it wasn't right. He should have been on his way back. But I gave it the benefit of the doubt, and after about an hour, I knew that he probably died. There was no other explanation I could come up with. He wasn't the kind of person that would just randomly do something and not show up for a couple hours. He would never have done that. And so I gave him another hour after that, and nothing. And then I noticed the tide was coming back in. And I was at the part of the beach that was exposed for low tide, and that was about to be covered, and the whole area was about to become a harbor all the way back to the mountains, just about, which was about a mile and a half from where I was standing.
A full mile and a half covered by the tide in and out.
Yeah. So I started looking around, and it's like, you know, we had been behind that area and scouting out the previous day, and that's where we saw the bear sign, the wolf sign, all that. So I knew I didn't want to go to the trees because I didn't know that area good enough, and I knew the animals were there, which I didn't need to fight them at night. So I said, other options, and there was a knoll about a mile or so back right next to the river channel. It was the only area in the whole basin there that had marsh grass. And so I said, I'm going there. So I started hiking there, and it was starting to get dusk. And the tide coming in, and so I'm wading through this water almost up to my chest and ice cold water. But I had to get out of there because I was ready. I mean, the tide levels vary up from what I understand about 20 feet from low tide to high tide.
Wow.
So you need to move. And so it took me a while to get up to that knoll, but I got up there, and there was several big trees, anywhere from 100 to 150 feet long, but they were old and they had fallen over. They're almost like driftwood now because of the weather exposure. But when the tree falls over, you have the root base that stands vertical. And I picked the biggest tree at the top of this knoll, or almost at the top of the knoll. And it was probably a 150-foot long tree, and it had about a 15-foot tall root base yet that was sticking up. And I said, you know, the marsh grass down the knoll from that is all matted down, like the water is always over it. The marsh grass by this tree toward the top is all standing up. I figured that's out of the water, so I'm going to stay here. And I had a little fanny pack with me, and I always have fire starting equipment, three different ways to do it. And, you know, I had four Quaker oat bars in there, which I just picked up at the Walmart in Ketchikan on a whim. I was walking by him. I said, hey, that looks like a good thing to have, and I grabbed him. And it was like, I am so happy I did. But anyway, I got a fire started right as it was getting dark. And mind you, I'm soaking wet from going through those channels. And so it got dark, and that night was very interesting.
So what was that first night like?
Well, first of all, I mean, my whole focus was getting dry and warm. And I did. One thing I did leave out, and it's probably the key to my surviving this whole thing, is I never felt alone out there because I'm a very religious person. I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And after the first hour when I knew something bad happened to Garrett, I started praying, and I just kept it open for 7 days. It's like there was, I was talking with somebody all the time. I never talked to myself. It was always out loud. And when I prayed, it was always out loud. It was like I was having a conversation with God. And I had a little personal memorial service for my friend, and came to grips with that, you know, and what had happened, and that, you know, we need to last for a week because they're not going to expect us for another week. So I started to make plans already for what I had to do to get through this.
And this personal memorial that you had for your friend Garrett, tell me more about that. What did you do?
It was more of just a time of reflection and prayer. I remembered him. Did a lot of crying that night. I pray that God remember him, and I know he will. So I came to grips with it in that way. And then started to plan what I had to do to last for another week.
And what was part of that plan?
I just had to tough it out at that tree in the middle of that delta for seven, eight, 9 days, whatever it took for the rescue guys to come. Because it happened on a Sunday. They weren't going to his family wasn't going to expect us back until the following Sunday. So I knew nobody would be called for a week. I just knew that. So I said, we're gonna just stay at that tree. You know, I can do this. And I had the four oatmeal bars. I had labeled them Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So I know I had an oatmeal bar, at least one a day for 4 days. And I said, and I could last 3, 4, 5 more days after that.
You had two rifles and some ammunition. Did you consider hunting for food?
I did. To make a fire? I did. I wasn't too concerned about food, especially at the beginning. But the problem is that after I sat along the river and made up my plan and all that, late morning or so on Monday, it started to rain. And it, for all practical purposes, it never stopped raining. It was either a light rain or a heavy, heavy rain. And there was a couple hours on Wednesday where the sun came out, and I almost dried off. And I got about an hour of sleep, but that was the only break of the rain for the next 6.5 days.
And what were you wearing?
I was not wearing clothing for that type of weather. I was wearing clothing for hunting on a dry, sunny day. Fortunately, I had a windbreaker on with a hood, and it was low. It came down around your butt so you can cinch it off because the winds were going to pick up later in the week, and that became extremely important. That jacket saved my life.
I'm Joe Lindstroth, and I'm speaking with Adrian Knops, a Grand Ledge electrician and avid hunter who was stranded in remote southeast Alaska for 7 days back in September while hunting for bear and moose. What was your lowest moment during this ordeal, Adrian?
It was an interesting thing, you know. I was very aware of what was going on, but I didn't quite know to what extent I could take some of these things. Thursday, unbeknownst to me, I guess I should describe the situation around the tree too. The first night, the tide came up to the tree. I'm like, oh, good, it stopped at high tide right here. So I was right. And I was right. But unbeknownst to me, the week that I was there was a full moon week, which pushes tides higher. And unbeknownst to me, there was this huge storm system just off the coast that was about ready to move in, and it was pushing more water in. So the area that I was at normally would, with the standing marsh grass, would normally be out of the water. And all of a sudden, the second night, I had a fire started in the rain, under the tree, very little, almost worthless, but I had it. It made me feel good. And the tide came up, and I thought it would stop, and it didn't stop. It came in with a rush, and it just washed the fire and all my pile of wood away, and I had to jump up on that tree to get out of the water, the fallen tree. Oh. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, isn't it the same height every night? So anyway, Monday night saw the end of any possibility of a fire up there. And then it got worse. It was probably 2 feet deep in around the tree the first night. And then every night it got worse until later in the week it was 4 to 5 feet deep around that tree. And the grassy knoll with the standing marsh grass was underwater. I was basically on a tree falling over on top of the roots to get out of the water in a huge 1 by 3 mile harbor of salt water. And I was in the middle.
I'm picturing this. You on the roots of this tree sticking out with basically just water around you.
That's it. That was all that was there, just water. It wasn't later in the week till I saw the full moon. There's a little break in the rain clouds, and I saw full moon, and I realized what was going on. But anyway, by Thursday, the storms moved in, and that was very interesting.
By Thursday, the storms move in. So you have unrelenting rain, but not the storms
yet.
Not
the wind. And the wind was 10 or 15 miles an hour normally. But Thursday, the storms moved in. The rain got a little bit more, and these clouds were impressive that were coming in. There's huge black clouds. And I remembered my friend Garrett telling me, he says, you know, we don't get storms like you do down there, you know, with the clashing fronts and the lightning and thunder. And he says that lightning and thunder is somewhat rare up here. But that storm had a lot of lightning and thunder. It was just spectacular. And somewhere around noon, one, midday in there somewhere, the wind started. And it was like wind I've never experienced. All of a sudden, there was no wind, and all of a sudden, there was 50-mile-an-hour wind. Just like, boom, like a wall coming through. And it would sustain itself for 5 or 10 minutes, and then it would just stop for a minute or two. And then, boom, 5, 10 more minutes of 50-mile-an-hour wind. And it did that all the way to dark. And so you got to understand, when I'm on the ground at low tide, I can stand behind the upright roots and get somewhat protection from the wind and rain. But at high tide, twice a day for about 3 hours each time, middle of the night, middle of the day, I'm up on top of these roots and I have no protection of any kind at that point.
So you're just exposed.
I was to just the exposed.
Wind. How did you maintain your, with lack of a better word, your sanity?
The main thing of my survival is my faith, and my prayer was answered. I know it was. I mean, you can look at me. I'm no big, tough hero. I was able, because of my faith and prayer, to keep calm and level-headed and have hope. So,
towards the end of this week, what was your physical state, Adrian?
I was okay into Thursday. But after the winds knocked me around that afternoon and the rain and the lightning storm, I was like, I might not get out of here. I mean, that would have been the fifth day, counting from Sunday on Thursday.
Thursday was the day that it crept into your head for the first time.
Yeah, realistically, Tuesday night was kind of a hard night with the hard rains and the pains that started coming, but I wasn't really at that point where I'm thinking that for sure, you know, or anything. But I thought Thursday night, it was the fifth day, that there was a distinct possibility that I may not make it out of here. So what I did, my biggest fear is the whole week, it was never for me. I knew what was going on with me, and I was not happy but content with that, but it was always the wife, the granddaughter, the kids, the friends. And I was thinking, what if I didn't make it? They're going to think a bear ate us, or the wolf pack tore us up, or, you know, they're never going to know. And that was hard to take, that they would never know. It was a stupid accident with Garrett that spawned this waiting game with me. So I inscribed a little short story with my hunting knife on the butt of one of the rifles.
And what did you write?
It basically wrote that, I said, Garrett Hagen from Craig, Alaska, that's the little village he's from, died while taking his bear to the boat. So I figured from that part of the story they could ascertain that he died in the water alone. he got his bear, which he was going for. And it was some dumb accident with the boat. And then that was on the stock. And then on the butt of the rifle, I said, Adrian Knops, stranded on the beach. 5 days so far, cold, wet, no food. So I figured that painted kind of an accurate picture of what I was going through. And there was another fallen tree with some branches near to the river channel where if any hunter or search party or anything came up, you know, it'd be fairly close. And I hung that gun up there near the channel so that if anybody came through looking, they'd see a gun dangling in midair in the middle of nowhere and go over and grab it and find out what happened. So then Thursday night, the nights were always harder as far as staying awake, because between the first night and the hour of sleep on Wednesday afternoon, I'm working now on day five with probably 2 or 3 hours of sleep combined.
The entire time.
The entire time. And because everything is wet all the time, there's no place to lay down that's dry, so I didn't lay down. I never got off my feet. And
you were standing the entire time in the tree.
Minus a couple of hours. And my feet would fall asleep all the time where I couldn't feel them anymore. I have nerve damage on my feet yet. It's getting a lot better, but I still hobble around. And I think Thursday night was the night that I started tying myself with my belt to the tree, the roots. I'd stand on the side where the wind wasn't blowing to stay out of the wind and rain, and I would catch myself falling toward the ground.
Cause you were getting weak.
I was so tired that in the middle of the night, I could stay awake easily during the day, but at nighttime it was harder. And I catch myself falling asleep standing up, and I'm falling to the ground. And I'm like, I can't do this, because if the tide comes in and I'm laying on the ground sleeping, I'm done. So I,
what state were you in when the Coast Guard helicopter finally came to rescue it on the seventh day?
Seventh day, by late morning, I laid down in the grass for the first time. I was very weak. I was convulsing because I was so cold. So I laid down, said my last goodbyes and last prayers, and I was okay with it, you know. It wasn't scary or anything. I was just, I'm not sure I can get past today. And I was laying there for probably close to an hour. And then you hear the Coast Guard chopper blades. And it's like, you got to be kidding.
How did that feel? What was going through your mind?
Probably the most wonderful sound I've ever heard. I got to my feet, and they were working their way in. And they were flying real low, and I could tell they're looking for us. And the only problem is they were flying sideways and real low to the ground. And they were working their way up on the other side of the river, facing the far mountains. And they had their tail pointed to me the whole time. And they have no windows in the back, so I knew they couldn't see me. I'm waving my orange life jacket and waving, and they won't turn around. I'm like, turn around. I'm like standing in the middle of nowhere on this 50 yards from a riverbank. And they never turned around. And they worked their way all the way up to the back of that river valley and never saw me. And then they disappeared back in the mountains and going toward Canada. They were working their way up the river. I'm like, you got to be kidding. But fortunately, I had been up there and I knew that it's nothing but a river coming through steep mountains. And I couldn't see them flying their helicopter over the mountains, so I waited. Sure enough, 15 minutes later, here they come. And they're coming out 3 times faster than they went in, if not more. I'm like, these guys are leaving me. And I made that statement to the Coast Guard at the hospital, and the pilot got back to me through his commander and said that, yeah, we were leaving. He says, we were done looking. We were looking for 2 21-year-old guys in a boat on the river. That's all they were looking for. They weren't going to search the whole area. So they were out of there. And he said that in order to put those Jayhawk helicopters fast, with their little jet propulsions or whatever they got, they've got to level the aircraft. And he said, right as they were leveling the aircraft, and as they put the nose down, the rescue swimmer happened to look to his left, and I was in the window. He said, there was a fraction of a second later, you would have been missed. I couldn't believe it. But anyway, they saw me. All the energy just leaves you at that point. It's like you have not a care in the world. It's like, these guys are really good. Just sit down here, let them do their job. And that's what I did.
I'm Joe Lindstroth. I'm speaking with Adrian Knops, a Grand Ledge electrician and avid hunter who was stranded on remote southeast Alaska for 7 days back in September while hunting for bear and moose. How did the Coast Guard find out you were missing?
As I was saying, Saturday night the storm got worse with wind. I mean, it was like tornado wind almost, you know. And all week long I was looking at that boat anchored out in the harbor, thinking that that's going to be the landmark that the Coast Guard will start looking at when we're reported missing. And then I'll be right here. It's perfect, just perfect. The storm was so strong it blew it off anchor and blew it out into the ocean canal and gone. It just disappeared. And I kind of sunk a little bit right there. And I'm like, well, whatever, you know, it'll work out. And that actually saved me.
The boat becoming.
Yes, because there was a little mini cruise ship in the canal that night, and they found it adrift at 9 o'clock at night with anchor down but drifting in the middle. And they knew something was wrong. And I don't know why, but it wasn't until like 3 in the morning that they called the Coast Guard, but they called the Coast Guard eventually. And so the Coast Guard started looking right away Sunday morning. Otherwise, we would have been reported missing Sunday. They would have waited a day to make sure it was legit, and then Monday or Tuesday they would have started looking, and by that time I may not have been alive. So that strong, like, it was like the water. It kept raining, which was bad, but I had fresh water to drink. The wind, it was horrible. But if that boat wouldn't have been ripped off anchor, I may not have been able to make it. So you just never know. You never know if your enemy is your friend, I guess, is the thing. And there was a few enemies that turned out to be friends in that situation.
So I'm curious, Adrian, when the Coast Guard picked you up and they finally took you back, which I assume to a hospital,
right.
What did the Coast Guard tell you? I mean, these guys and women have experience out there in rescuing folks in the wilderness. Did they put your situation in context from what they had seen in the past?
They did. In fact, the Coast Guard wanted to interview me on camera. They said to help them in their training program for survival. And I said, well, what's that all about? And the Coast Guard guy that was doing the interview, he said, we've never found anybody alive 7 days out there before with no food, inadequate clothing, in those kind of weather conditions. Just, it's never happened before. And we kind of want to know what you did in order to survive. Says the closest thing we can come to in southeast Alaska there would be a guy surviving 7 days, early September, warm weather, sunshine all week. So I said, okay, let's talk. And quite frankly, it boiled down. The biggest thing is me keeping calm without fear, making good decisions, and it all had to do with my faith and prayer because that's what kept my head level. I also got a chance to talk to one of the rescuers, and he said the same thing. He said, everybody's going to want to know what you did because not only how to survive, but when they go out to rescue people, they want to know who's out there that they're searching for and what their chances are of survival because they would, you know, a lot of times they may give up too early. That's what they're afraid of, and they want to know the chances that people have and what they can draw on and how.
Now, your friend Garrett Hagen was eventually found.
Yeah, 4 days after they found me.
Have people been able to piece together what happened?
U.S. Coast Guard put out a big search effort, but then there was a vessel from his hometown with his friends and brothers and stuff on board. And they're all very good seafaring people. And they spent 4 days up there at the Coast Guard. And Garrett's friends think that what happened is that he approached the boat wrong in the current. And as he grabbed the rope on his boat to tie up, probably there was a jerk or whatever, and he fell. And he never had anything over the side of his boat. to once you get in the water to climb back up. So once he hit the water, he had to either stay with his little skiff and hopefully get into that, or that was his only option. So they think maybe the skiff drifted out of his reach, and so that's their theory. That's what they shared with me anyway.
When you met with Garrett's family, did you deliver them the gun?
I did. Yeah, that was kind of a sad time. Anyway, yeah, we we spent 2 days with them, and I brought the guns with me and gave it to them. And we kind of never left each other for 2 days.
You've mentioned over the course of this interview, Adrian, that you're a man of faith, and that's what helped get you through this situation. I can't help but think that these things just keep piling on for you during this story. First, your friend is gone. Then the rains come. Then a storm comes that people aren't used to seeing, with lightning and thunder. Then gale force winds. Was there a moment where you ever questioned your faith?
No. Never. I don't believe that God runs around and rescues people. Otherwise, why would he let someone die in a car wreck? You know, why didn't he rescue them? So that doesn't make sense, that whole theory that God takes people. I don't believe that at all. So I never doubted my faith, and I knew the stress was there. one other thing, just to show what kind of stresses that do happen mentally out there. Toward the end of the week, just briefly, but I took note of the two rifles, and I said I could end this very easily. I had a conscious thought that way. It wasn't a serious thought because I don't believe in suicide, but it was a fleeting thought, and I had to just push that out of my mind, and I just took that attitude. So whatever happened, happened. I just wanted to make sure that whatever I did was right, and that if I did die, I wouldn't die in a bad taste in his mouth. That was my goal, and I achieved it.
Adrian, thank you very much for taking the time to tell us your amazing story.
You're welcome.
Adrian Knops is a Grand Ledge electrician and avid hunter who was stranded in remote southeast Alaska for 7 days back in September while hunting for bear and moose. For Current State, I'm Joe Lindstroth.